Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, welcome to Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. My guest this week is Dan Renton Skinner. It is with great pleasure that I announce there are now more Emergency Question books available. Hopefully, by the time you're seeing this, the first edition is all sold out, and we've had to do a reprint. So go and buy these, and your money will help to film the podcast. If you're listening to these, don't worry, it's free. Yeah, there's 500 Emergency Questions there, lots of fun. Anyway, enough about me. Let's see something with Dan Skinner in it. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has just handled David Baddiel's laptop and is wishing he'd washed his hands before he came onto the stage. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Oh, hello. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was making a sex tape with Paris Hilton the other day, and she called it Rehearsed, but that's what she is. I don't know if that's going to catch on. David Baddiel from last week's podcast. He's left his laptop. He hasn't missed it in all this time. A week has passed. It's just been sitting. I mean, it just shows you can trust the people in London. It's been sitting on that stage for a week. So I'm wondering if he might suddenly appear, remember what he's done, and appear. If you see David Baddiel coming in, shout, he's here, he's here. He's getting his laptop. If you didn't come back, David, we've got your laptop. So that don't, if you're listening to this podcast in August, we got your laptop. We will release it for a fee. Let's have a look at who's in the audience today. It's the usual suspects. Three empty seats here at the front. I always keep those empty, those three, just for emergencies. I'm going to talk to this gentleman. What's your name, sir?
Andrew,
love to meet you. What do you do for a living?
I'm a mental health social worker.
You're a mental health social worker?
Yes.
Can't do any jokes about that. Can't do anything about that. How's it go? Have you helped anyone's mental? Yeah, good. I like to think you've helped someone. Good. I would like that as well. And you brought your patients along this evening.
What's your name, madam? Patsy. It's a nice name. What do you do for a living? You work in pathology. Fucking what an amount. I wish these three fuckers had turned up. Is pathology what Quincy does? Yeah, is it after people are dead? Is that what it is? Biopsies. Oh yeah, so yeah, people are, you cut people off, bits off. I once had a biopsy on my penis. You ever done that one? Do you want to come back and to try? Just in a medical capacity, just out of medical academic interest. Didn't have much to cut off, and they cut it off. I don't like you, Patsy. What about you, sir?
I'm Dean.
You're Dean. I know you, Dean. I've talked to you. I know Dean. Dean comes from America. He's a professor of comedy. So how are you having, is this your, that's not your son there, that's not your 8-year-old son. No, that's what confused me. Are you with Dean?
No.
Has he been alright during this? He might be a mental stalker. I talked to him for like about 2 hours. He's pretending he's doing some academic research on, yeah.
He's doing a good job.
He looks normal, doesn't he? He looks quite normal. You on the other hand are not doing a very good job. And what's your name?
Nick.
What do you do for a living, Nick? You run a pub. That's more like it. That's normal. If old Al Murray was here now, he'd be having the time of his life with you. Do you not think you should smarten up a bit if you're running a pub?
No.
No? Okay. Don't put people off. You'd be your... I do. I'd be worried if you were pouring beer for me. All your beard hairs going in it. No? They like it in your pub, don't they? Where's your pub?
In Carshalton.
Carshalton? Yeah. Where's that? There's a beach, Carshalton Beach.
Yeah.
Okay. Near Croydon.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. You haven't come that far. It's been all right. Nice to meet you. Cut all that out. So, it's. What a fucking disaster. What a fucking disaster. Piece after piece. No, I've just talked to David Frew about nuclear energy. That's what I should have done. Hard in this comedy game, it's not as easy as it looks. Even people, what do you believe in mental health? Fuck you! Trying to do my job up here. Pretend to be so, say I'm a clown or something. In a bad mood now. So will you please welcome my guest this week. You're not as good as last week's audience, I'm telling you that. The second row was fucking awesome last week. Nice to see you again, Dean. It was a very interesting chat we had. I hope it all turned up somewhere. our guest this week, he's probably best known for being Morton Frog on the Pinky and Perky show revamp in 2008. That's why we're all here tonight. Will you please welcome Dan Skinner, ladies and gentlemen? Dan Skinner. Welcome. Sit down. Pull up a chair, pull up a microphone.
I'd forgotten I'd done that.
Had you?
Yeah. What was the character called?
Morton Frog. Oh, I'm imagining he was Frog, French, yeah. Or something. Was he,
yeah,
French?
No, he was Indian.
Oh, was he? Yeah. It's even more offensive than I imagined.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I won't do the accent. You don't mind. Yeah. No, I can't remember what he was, actually.
No.
Yeah, one of my first ever things.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I loved Pinky and Perky when I was a kid.
Yeah, the revamp was shit.
Did they still do the high voiced singing?
Do you know, I can't remember a thing about it. Right. Yeah, so sorry. I'd love to have a few stories, but there's nothing.
That's right. Move on. That's why I wanted the pink. I was mainly Pinky and Perky.
Oh, really? Oh, right. Yeah. It's all of that. Well, crack on. Yeah, I'll see what I can dig up. I'll make it up if I don't know the answers.
Who do you prefer out of Pinky and Perky?
Pinky.
Yeah, Pinky is the best one. He's carried Perky.
Perky's nothing.
Nothing. You're also a bouncer in According to Bex.
Yeah, time. Yeah, big time. According to Bex. What was that one?
That was, I think that was Jessica Hines' sitcom. I'm pretty sure that Dan Tetzel from As It Occurs to Me wrote some of that.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
And
well, he got a chair. Was that Dan Tetzel?
That might be Dan
cheering.
Tetzel. Right, is it Dan Tetzel in?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
or his fan club.
It's a good show, that was.
It was a good show. It was a very good show. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's good.
Oh,
it's good to see. I was very interested in, you know, people do know you from Shooting Stars and things like that. But
I'm from Shooting Stars.
Yeah. Not the original Shooting Star.
No.
And But you've done.
I don't look like this when I do Shooting Stars.
You don't?
No. No, no,
well,
no.
Well, you're a master of disguise.
I'm a chameleon.
You are?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I play a character called Angelos Epithemiou, who's a... Well, Ricky Gervais might describe as a mong. But he's...
Please do give some underscope on your way out.
Absolutely. He's not, though, no. So don't bother. He's just, you know, one of those guys you see at the bus stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know. Depends which bus stop you're at. You probably won't see him in Highgate or Muswell Hill. But if you're wandering around the Wolverhampton area, then maybe.
And how long...
No disrespect for anyone from there.
I think they get enough.
They understand.
They understand. Yeah. Well, where did this character originally, was it a shoot created for Shooting Stars, or did you...
I've been doing him for... I don't know, 7 or 8 years before I was on Shooting Stars, and he was a character I met when I was doing a role play job.
Right.
Let's call it a government building. And he came in to do a job of extraordinary responsibility. This bloke came in. If anyone has seen Angelos, you would know that he's not remotely qualified to do this. And it was my job to sort of role play with him to find out, you know, if he had the necessary brains. So that's how I met him. And
right.
He was extraordinary stuff he came out with, and I sort of noted it. I sort of remembered it all, and then did it as a sketch that night on stage.
Right.
Yeah, I nicked his personality right. in its entirety.
I really like the sort of chippiness when he doesn't understand something. You what you know, it's coming. Yeah, it's sort of coming. Yeah, was that in that first character when
no,
he was challenged by something?
Well, he was very sort of, you know, although he didn't know what was going on, he was really like, you know, really confident. So,
yeah.
You know, it was like, no, I am in the right here.
Right.
Everyone else is in the wrong. Okay? So, you know, he didn't give a shit about anything. So it's like, that's cool. You know,
yeah.
It's really looking like he did.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a really, like, perfect person.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll nick you.
Did he get the job?
No. No, I hope not. I mean, he may have done, but I don't think so.
To you.
But yeah.
Anyway. So how did that get to the point where you were working with...
that's strange, isn't it? It's quite a leap. I used to, because I did it as a sketch show, and then as part of a sketch group, and then I went out onto the stand-up circuit. I thought I didn't have anything else to do. I was just like, I was doing bits and pieces in sitcoms and, you know, and other sort of sketch shows and stuff. And there was these sort of character nights popped up all over London. And I thought, well, I'll just do Angelos. And I went out onto the stage, and I didn't have any material. And I would just talk to the audience as Angelos. And then I'd go home. And think, yeah, it was nice. And I did that for ages and ages and ages, and really didn't think it was going anywhere. But I was enjoying myself, and they seemed to like it. And then I was doing Armstrong and Miller, the sketch show with Lucy Montgomery.
Yeah.
And she said, you know who? I kept putting sort of notes under her dressing room door, like as Angelos in childish writing, saying, "We need to talk." Right. And she said, "Bob Mortimer would really love that character." And I went, "Okay." So I sat on the end of my bed with my video camera, and I turned it on, and I just talked to the camera, and I went, "Now listen, Mortimer, for God's sake, it's about time you gave me a job, isn't it?" And I just talked to him down the camera as if he knew who I was. I said, "I can do whatever you want. I can shift stuff from here and put it over there and then put that stuff back there. And I can do all that stuff." And I popped that tape in a bag, and then I got a napkin and a pencil, and I scrawled a really, like, you know, one of a kidnapper's note on it. And I bung that in an envelope and scrawled all over that and sent it off. And I thought, oh, that's fun. And then, like, a couple of weeks later, he rang me up,
right.
Mortimer. Well, it was Lisa Clark rang me up and said, "Bob's seen your tape. You must understand we get a lot of weirdos through our door. Who are you?" And I you know, I said, yeah, I'm doing, is that
who he is?
Yeah. And then he said, all right, I'll come and see you do a gig. And he came down to Brighton to see me do a like 3-hour gig. And he sat right in the front row, right there. And it was a tiny little venue. And I did this really long, really, the 3 and 10, I think you'd done it with me and David used to do it. And he was just sat there staring at me for the whole gig like that.
Right up at me.
Not intimidating at all. And then afterwards, and he said, "Right, come and muck around in the room with me and Jim. Come and rehearse because we're putting Shooting Stars back together." I said, "Oh, I'll do that then." And then I turn up and at this rehearsal room, Matt Lucas is there, and Ulrika Johnson is there, and Vic and Bob and Jack D. And I hadn't worked with any of these people before. And Bob came up. Bob's quite frank and candid sometimes, and he just came up to me and says, "Dan, this is going to be really tough for you because we all know each other and you don't know any of us. You're just going to have to chip in." I went, "Thanks, Bob." He said, "No, but I'm just telling you, I will be shit, but, you know, that's what it will be like on the night, you know." I went, "Oh, fucking hell, all right." So I put my gear on and backed my hair down and I sat there and then... I thought, God, if I don't say something, I'm just going to stay here. I'm not going to be able to, you know, I'll just freeze. And so they're all chatting away because they knew each other. And I just chimed in and I said, "Look, have we started this yet? Because I've got to go. I haven't got time for this." And then they're all like, "Who are you?" And I just carried on from there. And then Bob said, "Right, come and do the show."
Brilliant. I mean, that's a kind
of... No, it's quite strange. I do appreciate it. So, like an unusual way in.
Well, I like... Vic and Bob have both been on this show, and I really like them both. I really love Bob Mortimer so much.
Yeah,
he's
funny.
I mean, not that I don't love Vic as well, but he's so naturally funny, Bob, and seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's lovely.
And that's the same, you know, to take that chance.
Well, that's
they seem to do that with a lot of people. I think, you know, they do discover quite a lot of
people. Yeah, and I think Bob is particularly good at that. He's like, he sends the lift back down, you know, that phrase, and he'll always sort of find someone and go, "Yeah, that's really interesting." And he'll give you, you know, if he likes you and then Jim likes you, they'll stick you, they'll just go, "Yeah, we want you to do that."
Yeah.
And they don't care what the BBC says. I mean, all the way through the first year of Shooting Stars, I was just sort of going, "Please don't get fired. Please don't get fired." After every episode, I just thought someone from the BBC was going to just go, "Thank you, off you go," you know, because I was like being like this, you know. They don't like that on telly. And they didn't fire me, and it just went on and on.
The astonishing thing about it, I think, is just that TV has become such a, you know, closed shop and a lot of people getting in a certain route. So it's really funny to hear someone getting in by sending a tape in a bag.
It's really quite unusual, isn't it?
I do appreciate that. Stuff beforehand, but, you know, but it's still...
Because everyone said to me, "Oh, bloody hell, that was, like, really brave of you to do that." And I was like, "No, not really." You know, it's just that it was fun. It was a silly thing to do, and I didn't, you know, I thought it'd be fine. I thought it'd be all right. It went okay.
And it's quite a high state. It's an interesting character because it's quite a, you know, there is an element of that. Is this acceptable?
Yeah.
But it's also quite a high status character.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think if he was like, I think if he was a victim of any sort, then it would be, you know, it would be a bit. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. But because he's like quite on the front foot and he's quite prepared to give you his opinion, albeit, you know, dodgy as it might be, then I think that's all right.
Yeah.
People don't seem to... People have never accused me of anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, I have.
No, I haven't.
No. And you sort of started out in sketch... You did very successfully with sketch comedy straight away, although you were in a sketch group before you won the nominated for the Perry Award called The Benders.
I don't remember, it wasn't The Benders. You've done your research. Yeah.
Why were you called The Benders?
Yeah, I don't know. It was Wimpy. You know Wimpy? Mm-hmm. The burger bar. They used to do... I didn't come up with this. They used to do a sausage in a bun called a bender bun. You know, it was a frankfurter that went all the way round. And it had little cuts in it, like that, and then it was in a bun, and they called it a bender in a bun. Only because the sausage was bent all the way around. So we decided to call ourselves the Benders. Bit of nostalgia, retro. I didn't decide that. I just went along with it.
I love the name. Well, like Rob Llewellyn on the, his first sketch group was called The Joeys, which but I think but I don't think it was because of that.
Oh,
but,
okay, right.
Maybe
okay.
It was. Who knows? Yeah. But I love those.
There's
funny.
Loads of weird.
Well, you got to come with funny. So you're in Dutch.
Dutch Elm Conservatoire was the next one. Yeah.
Which is another name.
another name. Although I can't remember that. I think that was just drunk in the pub. Yeah. That one. Yeah. And it was like there's five of us in that, so I think we each came up with a word each. The Dutch Elm
Conservatoire.
Yeah. It's. Something like that.
I mean, it's a pretty impressive lineup of people in that sketch.
Yeah, as have gone
on to be.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
So Rufus
Jones, Jim Field, he was an actor in Hunderby and Camping, and
he played Terry Jones in that Monty Python thing very well.
And Jim
he's in Field's, that advert where the bloke.
You might know him best for the James Reid advert for when he rides along as a knight and employment people.
That's what he's best known
That's what he's best known for. He'll be thrilled to bits when he hears this.
That's his best work.
Best work. And what's it, when Jim Field Smith, who's now a director, who's directed Hollywood films, and Jordan Long, who's an actor, and Stephen Evans, who's also an actor.
Do you try and get into the Hollywood films? Have you managed to...
Who, me?
For Jim's, has Jim cast you in anything?
I went for an audition with Jim the other day, yeah.
Oh, do you?
Didn't get it. No, he's a good mate of mine. Yeah. Really good mate of mine. I was going to go into the details of why I didn't get it, but you're not interested. No,
but you do a lot of acting. I met you when you auditioned for.
Oh yeah, for you, which I didn't.
You didn't get that. Yeah, that's right. if you put a tape in a bag, mate, I'd have fucking put. Yeah, no, that's all you need to do.
Yeah,
tape in a bag.
You know,
remember,
I thought you might want to meet me, but it turns out that didn't work. What a shame.
No, you're very good.
Thank you very much.
You didn't
have to say that, though. Yeah,
but you were very good.
It couldn't have been that good.
But no, but I think that's the amazing thing. I've been on both sides of auditions, and I don't. Really, I don't do very well in getting auditions myself. Oh. I get occasional things, but it's such a weird process.
Yeah, it is.
On both sides.
Yeah,
because
it's very forced and awkward and strange.
And so often, and I think about this all the time with things like, you know, the decision you make about who gets to be in something.
How do you make that decision?
It's really difficult, and sometimes it generally comes down to being, you know, between two people, and you can't decide.
In my case, is that what it was?
That was more or less what happened.
More or less.
Yeah.
Not quite.
I think in the end. You did a very powerful audition.
A
lot of people did very bad auditions. You did a very good audition, and the reason you didn't get it was because the
age.
It comes out of age. It was the female actor we wanted. We wanted a woman.
Yeah, I can't compete with that, Richard.
You came close.
Yeah.
You were going to be her boyfriend, but we felt it was too. No, a man being 13 or 14 years older than his partner, that is just disgusting.
Yeah. But no doubt
people
will
on
stay
television
in.
will not go for that. But so no, but it's you sort of think that if something like The Office, which you're obviously in, but if those main those main characters in The Office, you know, if that came down to someone, Ricky Gervais going, oh, should we have Mackenzie Crook or that guy? Oh, let's go with Mackenzie Crook. I think he knew Mackenzie Crook, so it's probably not a good example. But that life changing decision, especially for Tim from The Office, the main one from The Office. That was
Were you up for that?
No. Okay. If he hadn't got that part, you know, but getting that part is what's propelled him into everything else he's done.
You mean Martin Freeman?
Tim from The Office.
Tim from The Office.
And he's in Tim, he does Tim from The Office in The Hobbit.
He does
Tim
Fargo.
From The Office in Sherlock. Tim from The Office in Fargo.
In Fargo, he does Tim from The Office.
He does it. Yeah. He's doing an advert now.
He does it in Lord of the Rings. The Hobbit. Tim from The Office.
Yeah.
Tim from The Hobbit.
And. You know, so that decision, I'm not saying you wouldn't have made it anyway, but I think that decision, you end up being, they don't know that's going to get on to be a massive hit, and it goes on to be a massive hit, and then everyone in it gets becoming everything else.
Well, I hope yours goes on to be a massive hit, Richard.
And then you can
see. And then I'll be really pissed off. Yeah.
There may be other roles, Stan.
There may be other roles in it if it should go to screen.
It's a big if.
Never know.
You never know your luck.
Never know.
But you have done lots of...
A lot of hoops to jump through, though, isn't there, those things?
There's a lot of hoops.
It's a very difficult process, I know.
It's a fucking pain in the ass.
I know, it's horrible.
That's why I just make my own things.
No, exactly. This is the right place to be. You can control this environment.
Yeah, up to a point. I'm interested in all you, because you've done lots... It's interesting to see a comedian doing... You've done quite... serious films. Or you're in High Rise.
Yeah, yeah. Have you watched that?
I haven't seen it, but I've seen bits of
it. Serious film. It's bonkers.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's based on the J.G. Ballard novel of the same name, and it's a dystopian future set in a high rise block, where the landed gentry live at the top, and the sort of lower middle class, upper middle class, are at the bottom, and the building sort of breaks down. And they start having running battles and pitch running battles, and it's Ben Wheatley. So there's loads of sex, and well, it's Ballard and Wheatley, which is a good combination. There's loads of sex, and there's loads of violence and death and explosions and filth and scum. Yeah, but it was great fun to do.
Yeah, well,
that.
He's an amazing director to work with.
He was just brilliant.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And he had the reason I was doing that was because he had directed.
Had you sent a tape in a bag?
I sent a bag. Yeah. No, he directed a load of the Vic and Bob sketches for Shooting Stars. Yeah, that was Ben that did that, and I met him doing that, and then he just said, "Come in and audition for this role."
Right.
And my performance was obviously powerful enough for him. It wasn't enough for you.
It was too powerful.
Too
for
powerful
it was
for
too
you,
scary.
Exactly. Too yeah, too no, I can imagine. Yeah. And that was great.
Yeah.
That was good fun. Yeah, that was with like Jeremy Irons and Tom Hiddleston. And
There
was Elizabeth Moss.
It's amazing. Like, Tom Hiddleston takes his top off. He looks quite good.
Yeah, yeah. He does look very good. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Do you take your top off in it?
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I look really good. Not as good as him. He's skinny though. But yeah, there's a lot of nakedness in that.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, then.
I do. Well, I thought when I first saw Tom Hiddleston, I first saw him in that when he was playing Lockie or whatever he is.
Oh, what in the
is that him in it?
Superhero.
I just thought he was shit.
Did you?
Yeah, I just thought that actor's terrible. He'll never work again.
Yeah, well,
I was wrong.
you've got a good eye, Richard. You're in the right game.
And I was also... You've done loads of films. You did Prevenge.
I did do Prevenge.
I watched the other day. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. No, but that's not unusual. No. But I haven't got it.
It is worth watching. I love Alice Lowe. She's actually was 7 or 8 months pregnant when she was directing and starring in this film.
Yeah.
It's sort of about her baby... taking over and
telling her, guiding her to kill lots of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially,
and you don't quite know why she's doing it, and then you find out why she's doing it. But you're right at the start of the film.
Oh, right,
and you're
I'm
playing,
the first guy that dies,
and you're playing quite a sleazy man.
Quite a sleazy, powerful man.
You think she's killing? It's the kind of role I would usually get of a wanking man in a spider shop.
To be fair, I wasn't wanking in the shop. I
would have added that to the role. Like I said, Alice.
Well, I could have done what I like, but I chose not to wank in it. So, up against the reptile house. When they asked me to do that, they said, "We got this film. Do you want to be in it?" I went, "Yes." And they hadn't finished the script, so they just gave me the scene. And then after it was right at the beginning of the film, and then he said, "You can just do what you like."
Right.
So I just improvised lots of sleazy.
I was wondering about the
double entendres.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it's come out.
It's good.
Thank
you're,
you.
You're very. You and Tom Davis is in as well. Tom Davis. There's lots of very memorable performances in of horrible men being taken revenge on deserving to die, and
why
the
not?
Occasional woman. So it's good.
Yeah.
You should watch it.
I will. You should watch it.
It's nice to see a British film, British comedy film, and it's not. I mean, it's horror really. It's quite much more gory than I thought it would
be. There's a sort of new genre like appearing, which is like comedy horror.
Yeah.
I think Ben has Ben Wheatley's sort of being a trailblazer in that, like making really tense cinematic films, but using comedians and then just punctuating the tension and the drama with really funny bits.
Yeah.
And whether that's a horrific killing or someone saying something inappropriate at the right moment.
Yeah.
And Alice has come in sort of behind that, and because she did Sightseers with Ben as well, and Steve, that's a good film.
And there's another one I've just done called The Ghoul, that was written and produced and directed by a guy called Gareth Tunley, who'd also worked with Ben right. Wheatley. So that's coming out in August.
That's just about now. That's
August. Is it? Oh, yeah, it's about
August
now.
August
yeah.
is just
yeah.
about now.
Around the corner.
And I'll talk about that. You've worked with TV's Emma Kennedy as well.
I have, yeah. You've played on her show called The Kennedys.
Yes.
Yeah,
based and on you played her life, Emma Kennedy's dad, who yeah. I know.
Do you?
Yeah, did you meet
yeah,
Tony?
Yeah, Tony, yeah. Great. Yeah. Yeah, lovely man. Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice guy. It was very... it was a very emotional time for them making that, because when we made the pilot, Emma's mum had not long passed away.
Yeah.
So that was, and her dad was on set while we were filming a particular scene that had actually happened.
Yeah.
So it was all very strange, you know, and we were in the middle of filming this, and we just heard her dad, who'd been watching the monitor, crying downstairs. He just broke down just because this scene was just. Like, you know, it was one of their sort of favourite family moments, you know, and he was watching it being depicted on screen. So that was quite, I don't know, emotional. Yeah, it was quite emotional. And then we did the series.
Yeah. It must be odd to, like, have you done that before? You've played someone and then you've they're on the set watching?
No, I've never done that before. It's sort of quite intimidating. Obviously, me and Tony don't look anything like each other. He's quite a short lad.
He is, yeah.
And I'm not. It was quite bizarre. But he was lovely. He couldn't have been nicer. Yeah. Emma's a lovely.
Was Emma nice to work with?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, no, honestly, she was. Honestly, she couldn't have been nicer.
She didn't put me in that, you know, and that is why.
Did you ask her?
Well, I would never ask, but, you know, I just would assume
that you would have gone in.
That I should have got.
Yeah, no, I agree. You should have done.
I can do Welsh.
How long you've known?
Hello, I'm from Wales. Hello, and it's me, Tony Kennedy. Yeah. Let's jump in the car.
Yeah, well, you just answered your own question.
Perfect, isn't it? Too good, that's the thing.
Yeah, too good.
That was too good. Powerful.
Yeah, too powerful. That's right. It was just me and you down the last two.
All right, I'll ask you this emergency question. Okay, 233.
From the book of emergency questions. Yeah.
If you had to be anally violated by a popular chocolate bar,
which
chocolate bar would you like to have inserted in your anus? If it had to,
gun to the head time. Yeah.
Probably but you can choose. It's gun to head, but any...
But anything in anything on the counter.
Yeah, it can put up there.
Oh, well, that's a difficult choice.
It is.
But it would probably have to be a fudge.
Yeah.
You know?
Just the one that small...
Yeah, well, it's not too big, and it's, you know, it'd do the job, I suspect. Whatever it is, the job that you...
Would you be worried about the fudge becoming lost?
I would worry on a hot day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's quite small, and it could...
It would be the middle of winter when we did this.
If it was pushed far enough...
What, too far?
Yeah, it could get stuck in there, couldn't it?
Well, it could do, yeah, but that's the same with any of the bars. Family bar of Galaxy, then you'd struggle with that. I mean, I would struggle with it. I don't know how you'd get on.
Not like I've put loads of chocolates up my bum, and that's why I asked
you. No, I thought you'd have researched everything else meticulously, so I thought perhaps you'd have, you know. I don't know. If I'm honest with you, I don't know, but I'd say it fudge.
Fudge.
What would you do?
George the Sound Guy wants
Is this true?
When he was asked backstage, in that thing we do backstage, he said, like, a Toblerone you get in an airport. That is. It's a big Toblerone. So people are very different. I would.
Blimey, man. There's no
I don't know. I think we'd have.
To,
I would go for. I think I'd have to go for a chocolate bar that I don't particularly like.
Why? Well, you
because
put your
I,
feet
cause,
in it for life.
Because, you know, I would. Even though I'm not going to eat it afterwards, obviously, I'm not weird. But I wouldn't like to think of, you know, like a twirl. I love a twirl.
Mm.
And I wouldn't like to desecrate the twirl in
you
that
use
way.
Use both of them but or just bat- one of them?
Well, I wouldn't do it because I love the twirl.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. But you'd say you'd like a Twix.
I'd put a bounce. Twix, I don't mind. I don't really like Twixes. I don't mind them. No one likes Twixes.
No.
No one loves them. No one hates them. So Twix would be a good choice.
Mm.
One after the other. But then
the one after the other, not both at the same time.
Definitely one.
No,
one at a time, but then the top one's definitely going to
get stuck.
Yeah,
but once you've already put one in, why bother with the second? You know what it does.
Yeah. Let's see how far we can
happen.
If you get enough Twixes, you can see if you can see get the first one to come out
of your mouth again.
Yeah. That's the beauty of the Twix. I think I go for a Bounty.
But you could do that with any chocolate bar, though. I mean,
I don't think many of them would, because the biscuit base of the Twix.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't think many of them would retain the solidity.
It's good and solid. Yeah, no, it's good.
So I think it could be like a chain of Twixes. Traversing your intestines up through
all
your stomach.
All the way up there into your gullet.
No, but I don't like bounties. I don't think bounties should be allowed to exist.
Okay.
I'd put a dark chocolate bounty. I just don't like that fake coconut stuff in the middle. I like coconuts, but I don't like desiccated.
Fake sweet coconut. Yeah. Right.
And I don't think it should be
allowed. Me neither.
I don't think it should be allowed. And I don't think people who like them should be sent to prison.
What about Turkish delights?
I don't mind Turkish delights.
Okay, great. There's one.
I don't know if I'd want to put it. I mean, that would be a challenge.
That's like that, isn't it? You'd really have to be a professional.
Even George is wincing at the idea of Turkish delight.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a bit scatological, so we'll move on to something else.
Well.
If you had to do a human centipede with two other people,
gun to the head.
Yeah. And you are in the middle.
Right.
What two people would you like?
Where does my head have to go?
Your mouth would be attached to the anus of the person in front of you, and your anus would be attached to the mouth of the person behind you.
Man alive. So I've got to stick my head in there.
Yeah, traditionally, people would choose someone at the front who they wouldn't mind eating
that's okay.
And pick someone at the back who they would like to shit the shit of themselves and the person in front of them into the mouth of.
Okay.
I mean, the back position is definitely the worst.
Do you ask this one a lot, this question?
Yeah, I do.
This is a real popular one.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And you can tell.
If I had to... Let's think now. Who would be up for that? That's what you got to think.
They don't think they have to be up for it.
So I'm just going to go through the phone book and see.
They're being forced by a mad scientist.
Who wouldn't mind doing that? I think someone off of someone from Hollywood in the front.
Yeah.
You
always think of the contacts.
I'm just trying to think of someone I work with who think maybe they wouldn't mind doing this. I don't know. In the front. It's a good question.
I'm going to wait until there's an answer. I'm not going to move on.
No. Good. I don't want you
answer
to.
Answer the question.
I'm going to answer
don't
the question.
Don't be like Theresa May.
Probably someone like, Judy Garland up the front. She wouldn't know.
Probably. That's the first person that springs to my mind.
You know?
I mean, I'm surprised it took so long for you to conjure that up.
Exactly.
It's pretty much everyone. It's like
I was just going through my phone book, and I got to G, and I think Judy Garland would be fine. No one knows how she'd react in that position. I think that's something we need to bear in mind. And then up the other end, let's stay in that era. I think probably Sammy Davis Jr. That's the new Rat Pack, right there. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I think Sammy would be into it. I don't think it would be. It's not something that I would do as a punishment. No. I think he'd be like, come on, I might be ready.
And I could come up behind with a load of Twixes, right through
everyone. Come out the front.
Then,
man, that's good. Yeah.
And eat the Twixes out of Judy Garland's mouth,
mate. Yeah.
That's a new level to the human centipede. Yeah, even the mad professor who does the human centipede did not think of. That is why I'm sitting here, and he's probably in prison by now, or making the human centipede for. I don't know of which it is the answer.
Fun question.
One of my questions is, which I know the answer to, is have you ever been on Sunday brunch? That is one of my new questions. Yeah, how was it?
How did you know that?
Because I've looked at your IMDb page, so I know
everything
about
you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've been on there. I went on as Angelos, though.
Did
so,
you
know
character?
Yeah, so it's easier. Yeah, I find it so much easier to do that stuff, in character, because you can just say what you like.
Yeah.
Chip in and ignore people and talk over the top of other people. No one can say anything when you look like that. Because if they try and confront you, you just go, yeah, what? You know, like a football hooligan. And then they just back away. You know, you can sort of own the program.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I did have to cook a sponge pudding as Angelos. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah, how
it came
did you
out
approach
well.
That?
Well, I just kind of got the sponge stuck it in the bowl and bung some other muck in there and it come out nice and I ate it.
Who coped better with Angelos, Tim Lovejoy or Simon Rimmer, which was the more, or was someone else guest host?
Rimmer's a bit, you know, like, yeah, I know what's going on. This is really funny. Yeah, but I don't really get it. And Lovejoy is more like, these guys so great, you know. Anyway, guys, I know we're all hungover.
I kind of love it. Do you love it? Well, no, because it's sort of terrible and amazing at the same time. And it's sort of surreal being in it, because I've been on it three or four times.
Oh, have you? Oh, sorry.
I just go for the food now.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's great. Last time I went on, got like... there was some amazing stuff.
I didn't think you were allowed to eat any of the stuff on the table.
The whole fucking lot of it down, you mate. That's why. And I tried to say as little as
possible. If I'd have
known
that.
I tried to say as little as possible and eat as much as possible. Yeah. There was fried chicken. It was fucking awesome.
What are you doing
awesome.
Next, Richard? Writing a book.
Shut up. And then
did you have to do any cooking?
Had loads of whiskeys. I
don't drink now, so I can't.
Oh, do you not?
No, it's a shame.
It's the best thing.
It's 10 o'clock in the morning. You just have the whiskey.
And I get you about 12 o'clock. You get on the drinks, and you just have a couple of them, and it's enough. There was martinis one time. It's just enough to get you through the afternoon.
I just thought if you'd done that, if I had gone and had a sort of whiskey at 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday brunch, I'd be out of there straight in the pub, just like. Finishing that off.
Oh, so I wouldn't. It's enough for me. No, yeah. I don't. I like drinking. I used to drink a lot.
Yeah,
but I kind of like to get like two drinks and then stop.
That's enough.
But in the afternoon, if you drink in the afternoon, then I don't get hungover. That's the good thing about drinking in the afternoon.
Okay, so I really like drinking. Sleep it off.
Yeah, I like drinking on my own.
That's why your wife puts the baby to bed.
I get home at night after a gig and I sit in the basement and I drink two whiskies on my own.
Yeah, good man.
Yeah. And I think...
If I could, I would.
And I think, this is the life.
This is the business.
I don't want anyone else around.
Yeah.
My wife's asleep, my baby's asleep. I just sit here. It's the fucking... I don't know why I spent so many times in pubs with other people.
Yeah, well,
when you could just drink alone.
It's a business.
Eat some pickled onions.
Oh, man. You play a lot of snooker on your own.
Yeah. There are a lot of things down there on my own in that basement now I'm married.
Yeah, the old human centipede going on down there. Oh dear.
But so I didn't know. So you've given up drink because you like drink. You like drinking too much.
Yeah,
you
I enjoy
drinking too much.
I haven't drunk for 14 years.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Yeah, wouldn't mind. Actually, I drank half a bottle of Cobra beer the other day.
Oh right.
Yeah, thinking it was non-alcoholic beer, and I just slugged it back. I was like, oh my god. And then my immediate thought after 14 years was, well, I might as well finish it. And then I thought, no, I better not. So chucked it down the sink.
Oh, well, that's amazing.
Stuart
Lee once, Owen O'Neill did a brilliant show about being an alcoholic and giving up alcohol. And Stuart think had seen the show. And they were in a bar going, what do you want? Do you want gin? Just Owen said, tonic water. And Stuart got him a gin and tonic. This is gin in it. Do you not see my fucking show? So I wonder how many people have been turned back from the many years by... Because I always think it must be difficult, because like, especially in show business...
Initially it was.
But everywhere you go, but even if you go to a nice hotel or something, they go, here's a bottle of champagne. You know, do you have to warn them ahead of time?
Yeah, I've warned them, because if they show booze to me, I have to drink all of it. No, it was like... When I first, because I stopped drinking just before I started doing all this stuff.
Right.
And the hardest thing was Edinburgh Festival, because that's like basically being at a student union for a month in August. And people are just getting smashed and everyone's anxious and scared and, you know, and elated and they're all drinking. And I was just sort of sat there like that, just like clinging on, you know. It was horrible, actually.
Yeah.
I never enjoyed any of the Edinburgh's. Because of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was not very nice.
Well, I've given up drinking a few times.
Have you?
Yeah, and like not just because I wanted to lose weight or whatever. And I've done a couple of Edinburghs without drinking. It's a very weird experience.
You just end up going back to your flat and just sort of...
But I think the older you get, the more that's... you know, again, I'm just this Edinburgh. I'm going to be just going. Oh, great, done the show.
Yeah, go home.
Back home.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's a different experience.
Yeah,
but it's,
yeah.
But then I think that's interesting.
Well, I saw also because you know when you first go there, you feel under so much pressure. You think I'm here for a month and I've got to meet everybody. I've got to make sure everyone knows who I am and all that stuff. You know. And you just feel everything is so heightened and it's not a normal place to be.
No.
You know, as a performer or anyone, you know, being in amongst all that stuff.
It is.
You love it though, don't you?
Well, I sort of did, and then I didn't. Well, in fact, I didn't, and then I did, and then I didn't really. Mm. So for a lot of the time, I didn't enjoy it at all.
Really?
I found the pressure of it's too much.
Yeah.
You know, you're hoping for stuff that's not probably going to happen. But also just all that maelstrom of, you know, you're working with different people and when it's going up as students, you know, it's just like 30 people all sleeping in the same...
On the floor
in the same room. It's just crazy. It's sort of fun.
But when you're students, that's fine.
It's fun, but then you still have those emotional... 50, when you're 50 and doing that.
It's not so good.
But, you know, I was lying on the floor and Stuart Lee trying to wank me off with the ventriloquist dummy and that's, you know...
I remember you talking about
that.
Yeah,
everything.
I meant to ask you about
everything's, that's the fact of my life.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, I should have mentioned that to David Baddiel last week. That was
last week.
That was the thing that... Has he come back for his computer yet? I'm going to have to get that to him. It's annoying.
Yeah.
Wish he'd never come on, Neil. I'd enjoyed it till then. I know. Are those days behind going to Edinburgh now? Or are you working with Barry from Watford?
Yeah, I'm working with Barry from Watford.
So you do a radio show?
We do a podcast.
Podcast.
Yeah. And from that, we've written a live show and we're touring that at the moment. We did the Soho Theatre for a couple of weeks and we toured and we've done all the festivals. And then we're going to go on tour again. We're doing Latitude Festival.
Oh, are you?
Are you doing that?
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Oh, it's a really fun
is
one.
Is it? I like Latitude, but performing at those festivals are often like,
quite good. So I've always, so far... And this is going out after this has happened, so...
Oh, is it?
So far, it's always been really good. Because it's the comedy tent's set up and people go to the comedy tent. And then, you know, so it's not... Sometimes you go to those things...
I think we're
music.
In the cabaret tent.
Oh, well, I think that's good as well.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. So do you work... Is it a double act or are you doing...
Double act.
Yeah.
Double act. It's a weird little show where Barry has formed a cult... And to basically make money, and he roped Angelos in to be his disciple, and I come out and that's it for an hour.
Really,
I've sold it brilliantly. But please come, it's amazing.
Well, Alex Lowe, he's amazing. Oh, no, because I saw him very early on. He used to do a show about wrestlers.
Do you know that show he wrote, that was based on Simon Garfield's book called The Wrestling. And he did that show in about 1998.
Yeah.
And I found that book in 1999. And I wrote to Simon Garfield saying, I'd love to make this into an Edinburgh show.
Right.
And he said, someone's already done it.
Wow.
And it was Alex.
It was amazing. I went to see it twice.
Really?
And the first time I saw it, I wasn't sure if he was really a wrestler or not.
Oh, really?
He was so good, I kind of believed it to the extent that I thought...
Convincing.
Even though he was doing all these impressions of all the different wrestlers,
yeah.
I thought, if he's a wrestler, he's like an amazing...
Yeah.
Actor as well.
Yeah.
But I wasn't quite sure whether he was talking about going to America and at the end of it and doing... He was playing this sort of English wrestler.
Yeah.
And going to America.
He's a brilliant actor, Alex.
Yeah.
He's really, really... He was a child actor. He was in another country in the 80s with Rupert Everett on the stage. And he was Kenneth Branagh's stand-in for some time. When he needed to do the lighting, get Alex in. And he was in a couple of his films. And... Yeah, he's been working a long time. Whenever you meet him, he's like just like mangled and like, you know, out of breath. And there's so many things I've got to do. And like, you know, he's always, but he's really, really funny, lovely, brilliant.
And how did the two of you get working together on that? Was that with you?
Well, he was doing a, remember FUBAR?
Yeah, I do. I was on it for a little while.
Yeah, he was on that.
Yeah.
And, and then he called me up and he was had a 3-hour radio show, internet radio show, which he did not know how to fill, basically. And he rang me up and said, do you want to talk to me for 15 minutes in character? And I said, all right. So I remember I was outside Debenhams in Clapham Junction and he phoned me up and I said, all right, Barry, you all right, mate? Hello, Angelos. And I just talked about coming out of prison and being in the back of a prison van. And we talked for 15 minutes and I said, that was fun. I'll come and do the show with you next week. And he said, all right. And then we just started doing that. And then we ran into trouble with FUPA.
Yeah.
And then did the podcast and then wrote the show. And right. then blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to cut because they're quite different characters.
Oh, they're kind of different, but they're pretty similar at the same time. They're both like from that end of the scale.
Yeah.
You know, and they're you know, he's just an 80-year-old version of Angelos. And we can come up with any backstory we like, but it doesn't really make any difference. They're both like idiots and they both exist as idiots in the moment and you know, that's it really. We're trying to write a sitcom at the moment and which is hard, man. You know, you wrote which one? It was the pub one, wasn't
it? Time Gentlemen, Please.
Yeah, Time Gentlemen, Please. And you know, just trying to structure that and work out the differences with the characters, and you know, it's hard work. It's hard work. I mean, fun but hard.
Yeah, It's interesting. You're working in all these different areas. And
Well, you know, you're an entrepreneur, actually, you know, you've got to keep. You know, you've got to keep the plate spinning, you know, because it's like I had a really, really, really busy time for many, many years, and then as soon as I had a boy, as soon as I had my son, my work just sort of dried, you know, just for a period of time, because it happens like that sometimes. And when that happened, I just went back to live stuff and writing, and then until the acting sort of came back again. But if I don't have writing and performing, like as in live comedy or what have you, then I could never be an actor.
Right.
You know, where you just sit and wait for the phone to ring. I couldn't do that.
No, it's a
hard work. It's really hard work,
especially if you're as bad at acting as I am.
Then
it's the wrong game. Really difficult.
Yeah.
and next week's guest is Katie Brand, who you
work
with.
Oh, yeah, I did her show. I've done everyone's show.
What did you do on Katie Brand's show?
Oh, various.
Have you got any dirt you can dish on Katie Brand that I can bring up and surprise her with? What would she like to work with?
She was fantastic.
Yeah. She seems like a nice lady.
She's lovely. She's got a good religious background, that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Delve into that. Do you know her at all?
Oh, a little bit. She was weirdly, we were watching Fist of Fun to do the commentaries for Fist of Fun.
Right.
And we were like on about the second episode, and there's a shot of Katie Brand sitting in the audience of Fist of Fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as a teenager.
Actually, she's a fan.
Yeah. And I said, oh, God, that's typical now. Fans are doing better than I am.
That's right. Get her on the podcast.
But no, I really like her. She's just been doing a show about being a Christian, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Been brought up as a Christian.
My teenage Christian life or something.
I might have seen you years ago. I don't know if it's... I think it's the same production. But you did The Warp with Ken Campbell.
Oh, wow, yeah. Did you come to see that?
I came to see it, but I couldn't... I love Ken Campbell.
Oh,
but
man.
I'm very bad at staying up all night, and I lost track of what was going on tonight.
London Bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah.
And so I was like in about 90.
The Warp was like a 24-hour play, and it was a sort of mad theatre happening. And it was created by this guy called Ken Campbell and another writer up in Liverpool in the 70s, and they used to do it, The Everyman. And his daughter, Daisy, revived it in sort of 1998-99. And they used to do it down at London Bridge at this sort of... I mean, it was literally like old arches that they converted into a space, and it was a 24-hour or 48-hour rave down there. And we took over one part of it, and we'd do our play for 24 hours, and you'd literally have people walking in with cans of Tennent's and a stick and just lying there and watching a play and then just going off again and, you know, going mad, and then they'd come back again like that. So we were just like the sort of we were just like a youth hostel, really, essentially, with theatre going. But Ken was Ken was a genius.
Yeah,
did you ever meet him?
I didn't. I was obsessed with him and went to see all his shows, but I was too.
All right.
I was all his sort
of, have you heard the best Ken Campbell story?
Go on and tell me. I love Ken.
Have heard it, haven't you? But it's worth saying. Ken used to go to Ken Campbell. He used to speak like this. Sort of strange man. And he had these massive eyebrows, and he used to go up to North London to sit in a church to watch a séance quite often with a medium. And it was coming towards the end of the gig, the medium gig. I don't know what you'd call it. What do you call those things?
Happening. A séance.
Séance. Yeah, whatever. Calling up the dead. And she said, well, we've got 5 minutes. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to speak to anyone that's passed over on the other side? And Ken put his hand up. And she said, yes. And Ken said, yes, I'd like to speak to Lord Olivier, please. And and he said, she said, hold on. She went into a trance like that. And she said, OK, Lord Olivier's here with us now, so if you've got any questions, fire away. And Ken said, yeah, Lord Olivier, when you were alive, you said the greatest living actor of your generation is Charlie Chaplin. Now that you're dead, who's the greatest living actor of my generation? And she said, without batting an eyelid, the medium went, Jackie Chan. Right, and Ken, being Ken, he did an advert for Citroen or something, and he got paid loads of money. And so he bought himself an entire home cinema set up, and the entirety of Jackie Chan's back collection on DVD, and he watched all of them. And he started at the beginning, and he's watching them going, Lord Olivier, I'm not sure about this. I don't know about this. Like this. And he says, it wasn't until I got to Police Story 2 that I thought, my God, you're onto something here. And then Jim Broadbent rang him up and he said, Ken, I've been asked to do Around the World in 80 Days with Jackie Chan, but I don't think I'm going to do it. Ken said, you better come over. And he convinced him to do it, based on the fact that Jackie Chan is the greatest living actor of his generation. That's quite, there you go. That's Ken in a nutshell.
Sounds like Lord Olivier's just working his way through a Rolodex of Charlie Chan and Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
I just like the ones with the CHA at the beginning. Oh, that's brilliant. Was Ken still alive then, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Did you work with him on
I worked with him on the warp.
Brilliant.
He was really hard work, man. I mean, he was like, he didn't give a shit if he offended anybody.
Yeah.
Like, we would come in the middle of, we'd be rehearsing a scene, and he'd just wander into the middle of it and pick on someone and go, Roddy, you are the plug hole down which this production is rapidly sinking. You were just crushed. Yeah. He didn't give a fuck. He was a genius.
Yeah,
no,
it was too much. The warp was,
man,
just too much for me. I couldn't.
Yeah.
But his one man shows were just awesome.
Yeah. And he had a good show on Channel 4 as well, Seven Experiments That Changed the World, right, which you can find on YouTube. It's really, really good.
And Nina Conti does an amazing.
Yeah,
an amazing
Nina Conti.
Show,
yeah.
Oh, no, she hasn't been on. She's been on the Edinburgh one, but she hasn't been on this one. Has she been on this one? No. Thank you for the. Thank you, Wikipedia.
How do you know?
I tell you, sometimes I just forget. Like, sometimes I'll be talking to someone and they go, oh, you should come on the show. I go, yeah, I know, I've been on. I go, yeah, I'm in again. Yeah, again, I'm in. For a second time. I've done a lot of these things.
Yeah.
People are very forgettable.
Don't forget that story I just told you.
That was good. I hadn't heard that one before.
Oh, right. Well, there you go.
So there we go. So thank you for that. From Mike, that's from me. That's serious.
Means something. Yeah.
You worked with Steve Coogan on Alan Partridge. I hear he's a cunt. No, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I worked on Mid Morning Matters.
Yeah.
But
I
never met the man.
Did you not?
I was called to a voiceover place.
Right.
And they said, these are what we want you to say.
But then you were talking to him on the phone.
But he wasn't
in real
there.
Time. He wasn't there.
No.
But you were talking to him.
I was
him
just
in real
literally
time.
Going, reading off a thing. Blah, 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 blah,
and he didn't.
And they
didn't...
go, brilliant, Dan. Thanks.
Oh, really?
Okay. See ya. And the whole thing took about 10 minutes. But yeah, I worked with the man.
Yeah. And he's a cunt.
He's a cunt.
He won't even turn up to do the other end of a phone call with the other actor.
I mean,
that's
I've heard stories about him, as I'm sure you have.
I love him.
Has he been on this?
He's been on this.
Has he?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Good.
He's good. He's maturing.
He's maturing. Yeah. Yeah. He's becoming a really handy little performer. Yeah.
He's doing all right.
Yeah. Doing all right for himself. The guy's got promise.
I created that Alan Partridge character, by the way. But that's by the way I created it. Don't get any
on the day to no, it, no, no the day to
on
day
on the hour on the Wikipedia. Oh, the cool kids call it. Well, I'll ask a couple more emergency questions, and then I think we might be ready to go and flog David Baddiel's computer down at the market.
The market.
Oh, have you ever seen a ghost? I haven't asked this for ages. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
It's always good. It's always gets a good answer.
No.
Always gets some. This is amazing.
I've never seen a ghost.
Okay. All right.
I don't know.
Have you seen a ghost?
They don't exist. They don't exist.
It'd be crazy if they existed. Imagine if they existed.
I mean, why? They never see them in hospitals, and that's where you would normally find. That's where you. They're always in old houses and pubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Don't see him knocking around hospitals, and that's where you would see most ghosts.
Yeah.
That's why I don't believe in any of it.
Are you a racist?
About 75% no.
Okay, good. Yeah.
No, I'm not a racist. I know I'm sort of. Looks like I'm thinking about the answer, but I'm not a racist, and I'd like that clear and stated for the record now.
Okay. All right.
That's sort of a yes-no answer, that,
I could have caught you out with it, couldn't I? If you went, yes, I'm a racist.
Yeah, no, I'm not a racist.
And then that is podcast gold.
Yeah, exactly. I'd ask you to cut that out, though, if I had have said yes. Yeah.
God, can you cut that out? No, I can't cut it out. Racist. No.
Okay.
In fact, what I'm going to do is just re-edit it so you say yes.
Yes. I
don't even need to re-edit it now. I'll just cut out the bit between you saying no to the bit where you just said yes, I am a racist, and you've just done it again. But unfortunately, I've just done it.
Yeah,
so
you've both done it.
I've done it.
I think you can re-edit it.
We're both going to say, "Are you a racist?"
Yes, I am a racist.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
I'm a racist. Nice question.
Good. I know, but
they're all good questions.
When I catch someone with that, that's going to be gold. It's going to be the golden moment.
What, do you think they're just going to sit here and go, yes, I thought, oh, no, I'm not, no.
I lull them into a false sense of security with the centipede one, and then
bang. That's it. Yes, very much so.
Yeah,
I was perfectly lulled into a false sense of security with that one.
Yeah. Have you ever tried sushi?
Oh yeah,
I've tried sushi. It's all right, isn't it?
I've eaten lots of sushi. I've not just tried it.
Yeah.
I've gone to town.
You've tried it and gone back.
I've gone back for more and more. I love sushi.
What's your favourite method of delivery for sushi?
Deliveroo.
That's good as well. I like it when it comes on.
I like the bell. I like the bell. Yeah, I like that.
But like, you know,
I like the bell. I get overwhelmed when I go in there. Yeah. I see the bell full. Like, if you go, like, there's one place I go to in Piccadilly called Cooler Cooler.
Oh, you're an expert.
Have you not? If you like sushi,
yeah,
you should go there.
I'm gonna.
And there's a belt, and if you go there, the sweet spot is about 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
and it's got everything on the belt, and you just look at it and go, oh my god, I feel like the kid in a sushi bar. Yeah. You know, I'm an adult though. And I'm not a racist because I go to sushi bars, so I'm not racist.
Yeah.
If I was, I wouldn't go there. But that's proof. I also like Caribbean food and curry. But I go to that one, and when it's a full belt.
Yeah.
But you can do some real damage in a sushi bar.
You can.
Like, financially.
Yeah,
you don't know what you're eating.
You don't know, and you eat it.
All that foreign muck.
I went, there was one in Melbourne called Sushi Train. I can't remember what the sushi was like, but it came on a train.
Yeah,
fucking good. Brilliant.
Did you,
so I recommend.
Have you been to Melbourne?
I have been to Melbourne, that's why I went to Sushi Train.
Oh, right, okay.
It would be amazing if I hadn't been to Melbourne.
But I've heard it as some myth.
I've been there.
Oh, yeah,
been
Sushi
there,
Train. What do you mean? It just drives into the middle of the room?
It just comes in. It's just like a normal sushi thing, but it's on a train rather than on a conveyor belt.
That's a novelty sushi bar.
I'm not sure what the sushi was like. Right.
You don't like.
Well, I think it was one of the first times I had. That's when I probably tried sushi.
Right, okay, well, that would be a good place to try it because it's like fresh out the whatever the fucking ocean is there.
Racist against Australians. I knew it's all right to be racist against Australians.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, coming over here.
Yeah,
I'm not racist. So. Next question.
Okay, I'll do one more. I'll do one. This is going to be a good one. I'm going to go early in the book because. Someone will get some of the classics. would you rather date a man who is a... Yeah, see, I need to be popular. It was a 6 foot tall penis.
6 foot tall?
Yeah, 6 foot tall penis.
Well, like that one.
Yeah,
way.
Just 6 foot, like you, but
six
a penis.
6 foot long.
Yeah, 6 foot long, just his, but all he is a penis.
Oh.
Or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man where his penis should be.
Has a tiny mouth?
Man. There's a little man. This is. You must have been asked this question before. Would you rather date a man who is a 6 foot tall penis, literally a penis, no balls, just walking around on his, slithering around on whatever's on, like a snail?
Yeah, good.
But
yeah.
Like a 6 foot
penis. I'd stick him on roller skates, okay.
He's got, well, he's wearing some false arms, but mm-hmm. otherwise he's just
he's a penis.
He's a penis.
Yeah.
Or a man who, instead of having a penis, you get home, you get him, take out his penis, and it's not a penis, it's a tiny man.
Hello.
Tiny man.
Man, hello. Hello. He go. You take out his penis, and it's not a penis; it's a man. He goes,
man.
Hello.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know which one of those two I'd be more attracted to.
Yeah. But just on a base sexual level.
Well, just basically on a sexual yeah. level, I would it be the penis? I'd have thought, because the other one's a novelty,
yeah.
isn't it?
Like, well, it's two people. The other one, though, it's an immediate yeah. threesome.
It's well. But what would you do with the man coming out of the man?
I'm going to put him up your Twix hole.
Oh, right. He'd have to be into it, though. I mean,
yes.
You know, yeah.
I'm not asking you to rape the.
It's terrible if he wasn't into it. Yeah. I think, yeah, probably a big penis I'd go out with.
Yeah.
I'd probably have to put him on a skateboard.
Yeah.
Just to sort of, because he won't have legs, really.
That's very offensive to the 6 foot penis people.
Yeah, I know it is, but what can I do? You know, I've got to get him around.
So you're not moving fast enough, slithering around like a snail.
And then I'd have to pull him up steps. You're like that, drag him up, like that. And then go back, leave him at the top on the floor, like that. And then go back downstairs and get the skateboard and put that, and then put him upright. Put him back on there and then push him to whistles. Buy him something nice.
You have thought of that.
That's how you date a penis. That's how you date a penis.
Yeah.
I don't imagine.
Oh, I heard you the other day on 28 Acts in 28 Minutes on the radio. Do you remember
bloody
doing that?
Hell, yeah.
I was quite impressed that you, that was the Dutch Elm guys.
Yeah.
You managed to do a sketch in
one minute. What did we do?
I remember at the end you sort of said John Humphreys was coming up. It was, damn it.
Edit this out. Edit out the thinking.
It was quite an. I know what it was. It was I Have a Dream. It was that sketch about Martin Luther saying, I have a dream, and people going, is it a little dwarf coming in and running around and licking your trousers? Are you sitting in an exam? It was that.
Says
do you remember
a great
that
sketch.
One?
No, I don't remember it. No.
And then
no.
At the end, I have a dream that the bloke from the Today programme is going to interrupt me, which he did. John Humphreys then came in. It was a very cleverly constructed.
Well, yeah, that was
1 minute
very much. Yeah, that's what we were famous for. Yeah, I didn't write them.
I just thought. On
have another one.
Well, there's another one. We can do 500.
Oh, really? Really?
If this people
is available
there,
to buy this book.
It's available to buy.
Has it been reviewed?
GoFastAndStraight.com. It hasn't, but no. Well, only by the many people who've bought it who love it.
Yeah. Do they
everyone
do
loves
stars
it.
On Amazon?
Well, because it's only for sale at GoFastAndStraight.com.
Oh, is it?
From the back of this gig.
Well, why not?
I might give you a free one.
Oh.
Has your sibling ever seen a ghost?
No.
Do you have a sibling?
I have two siblings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, neither of them have seen ghosts.
Have they ever secretly seen a ghost and not told you about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think both of them have, yeah. Because I've noticed by their behaviour.
Yeah.
When we talk about ghosts and they go, oh, no, I don't believe in them.
I think they'd be put off telling you because you're so vehemently thinking
about
ghosts
against ghosts.
Yeah,
I'm against them. Yeah. One thing I am racist towards is ghosts.
Because they're
and
too
foreign ghosts.
They're too white.
That is the sweet spot.
What would it take for you to fillet the actor Keith Allen? Question four.
What would it what?
What would it take for you to fillet the actor Keith Allen? What would you need?
What would it take?
To fillet.
Well, like money.
What would you have? So just that you went straight for money. You could have anything you wanted, but you're thinking about the price.
DVD of Charles Bronson, Death Wish 1. That's all it would take. Yeah, honestly.
Good to know.
I haven't got a DVD player either, actually, so I have to. That would be pointless. One free year subscription to Netflix.
That's nice.
And I would do it.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get in touch with them. That's the most reasonable
I think it's worth, you know, if you're going to do these things, it's worth, you know, getting something good out of it,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think a year's free subscription to probably Netflix and Amazon, I think.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, Amazon Prime, yeah.
Yeah, well, Amazon Prime, you get so much more with Amazon Prime.
You do, you
I mean,
get
it's
everything.
Expensive, though.
It's £79.
I think it's gone up, hasn't it?
Is it?
Well, it seems well, a lot.
Well, that's all the more reason for me to suck him on.
I think Keith Allen's going to be sitting yeah, there going, exactly. you know,
so this is why.
This is totting up a bit.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
all right when it was.
Get
a
Keith
DVD.
Allen on the phone, will you?
All right.
Those well, bills aren't going to pay themselves.
One more, I reckon, and then I reckon we're done.
Okay.
It's going to be after a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is the most unusual thing you've ever used as a toilet paper substitute? Not a good one. It wasn't a good enough one. Gonna have to come back in. I found a good one the other day.
Yeah, because I can answer that
yeah.
question.
I
mean, unusual is a word that's up for grabs, isn't it? I mean, because what may be unusual to you may not be to me.
Yeah, toilet paper might be unusual to me.
Exactly. I've never used that stuff in my life. So
I just used my hand.
You know,
this is the one. This is it. 250. It's exactly halfway through the book. Except
okay.
more than 500. If you could have all your teeth replaced by psychic orbs that could tell you all future events by telepathy, but would scream at a high-pitched volume every time you opened your mouth, would you go ahead with the teeth replacement operation? If there's any questions you need to ask about that, I mean, it's fairly plain, but if you want to know
yeah,
any more...
Ask me that question
so,
again.
So, if you could have all your teeth replaced by psychic orbs, it needs to be all
what,
of your teeth.
What's a psychic orb?
Well, a psychic
like
orb
a, like
is like
round
a...
thing that...
I think it'd be a spherical, roughly tooth-shaped size
that
thing.
Goes in your mouth.
But, I mean, bigger than your teeth. It would be uncomfortable. They'd be so like one and a half
that.
Times the size of your teeth.
And they'd all, like, they would... They would. They could tell the future.
Yeah, they're
things.
All spit spheres, and they can tell the future.
All of these
by telepathy, but only all together.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, so you can't just have one put in.
They work as a unit. Right, okay.
It's all your teeth replaced with yeah. the psychic orbs that work together. But when if you open your mouth, it'll be... If your mouth's closed, they're just going...
But what's
going
to
happen? What's going to happen in
psychic,
the news today?
The benefit of having psychic teeth would yeah. be that I would be able to like predict the future.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to open my mouth.
Well, you go open your mouth and... Ah!
So I couldn't actually tell anyone what
no, but you could write
I have
it
all this stuff up
you could
here.
Write it down.
Write it down.
Text it. Tweet it.
That's the toughest question I've ever been asked.
Your mouth shut. I mean, how much do you like your teeth at the moment and how much
could
you, do
you could you have
dislike...
it for a while and then go back on it?
No.
Or do you have to just like no, commit to it fully?
It says NB, the orbs would be useless for chewing and make your breath smell of sulphur, but you would win the lottery every week.
I think I'd do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good.
I think I'd
well,
go. I think I would go. I think I'd do that.
Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Yeah,
it'd be worth that mild inconvenience.
I suppose so. I mean, I'd.
You
I'd,
could pay.
To,
you'd have so much
to
money.
To be honest with you, yeah. I don't know.
No.
If someone came to me with that quandary, I don't know how I'd answer.
If you could find someone who's already had it done, they could
yeah.
tell you if you're going to do it.
I reckon if you went on the internet, you'd find someone that reckons they've had
yeah.
it done. So maybe okay. I'll put a shout out.
Okay, cool. That's question 250 if you're following at home. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed it.
I've been a thorough
It's been all right, hasn't it?
Yeah, been lovely.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause for Dan Skinner. Thank you. Listening to Richard S. Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dan Renton Skinner. The music's by Pest. I always forget what comes up there in that bit. Thanks to everyone at Go Fast Stride. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guy. You're all lovely, lovely people. You know who you are. You don't need to be name checked. My producer is Ash Caffrey, who insists on being name checked. And it is a fuzz. GoFasterStrike.com and Sky Potato Production. Check out richchang.com/gigs. All the tour dates will be up there eventually. richchang.com/gigs for the show. Oh, frig, I'm 50, because I am 50 as you're listening to this. I'm not 50 as I'm saying it, though, so that's weird. Also, do remember you can go to GoFasterStrike.com and buy all sorts of things, DVDs, books. You can get the emergency questions book there and some exclusive postcards and badges designed by Leon Edler, which are nice too. And the money from those will go to making more podcasts, as will the money from the books. Anyway, thanks for listening. Go away now. Go away. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.